This is Mark Strassman, reporter with Utopia Media's Broadband Wireless Access World. We're about to speak to Jim Baller, who's an attorney in Washington, D.C. Welcome to Utopia Media's Broadband Wireless Access World.
Mark, nice to be back with you again.
Tell us what the Community Broadband Coalition is.
The Community Coalition, the Community Broadband Coalition is a consortium of corporations, trade associations representing a broad range of entities across the United States and consumer groups that strongly support local choice and the ability of local governments to play whatever role they believe appropriate in their communities in the broadband area. The Community Broadband Coalition's members include entities such as, there are approximately 40 of them. I can give you some representative members without running through the entire list. There's AARP representing the tens of millions of senior citizens in the United States, Association for Communications Technology Professionals in Higher Education, American Association of Libraries, American Public Power Association, Earthlink, EDUCAUSE, which represents the interests of the higher education community, Fiber to the Home Council, Future of Music Coalition, Intel Corporation, Earthlink, eBay, National Association of Telecommunications Officers and Advisors, National League of Cities, and so on and so forth.
Does the group have a website that people can go to get the complete list and find out what it's up to?
The group itself doesn't have a website, but if you'd like to get a copy of the letter that we sent to Congress and other information about this organization, including the names of the signatories, I would welcome you to visit our website, www.baller.com, and then click on to the community broadband page on the homepage of the website. That will then take you to a page that has a wealth of material on community broadband, including in the top block legislative matters, including the various federal and state bills and laws and proposed laws. There you will see at the bottom of that block a copy of the cover note as well as the letter itself to the members of Congress, and both the cover note and the letter to Congress, to the Senate, actually to 100 senators, includes the names of the entities that are involved in the coalition.
Okay, it's that letter that we wanted to focus on right now. What was the focus of that communication to the 100 senators of this letter that you've just sent?
Okay. Currently before the Senate is a bill to which we refer as the Lautenberg-McCain bill. That bill, Senate number 2094, would restrict states from enacting barriers to public entry into the communications field, particularly the broadband field, and it also contains safeguards for the private sector to preclude localities from discriminating in favor of their own broadband activities or entities that they are working with. And the purpose of the bill is to stop the practice that we've seen over the course of the last few years of states enacting measures that either prohibit or limit in some fashion that we regard to be unreasonable the ability of local governments to participate in the development of broadband in their community.
Could you briefly go over the background of how this became a federal issue?
In the Telecommunications Act of 1996, there was a provision, particularly Section 253A that prohibited states from enacting measures that would prohibit or have the effect of prohibiting the ability of any entity to provide any telecommunication service. The Supreme Court recently interpreted the term any entity as not applying to private entities as well as, or as not applying to public entities as well as private entities. Over the years since the enactment of the Telecom Act, about 13 or 14 states have enacted measures that in one way or another adversely affect the ability of local governments to provide telecommunications and other communication services.
Nebraska being one of the prime examples of that?
Is one example, that's correct.
Right.
And in the case in which the Supreme Court said that the term any entity should not be interpreted as covering public entities, the court said that that term may or may not have been intended to apply to public entities, but because it was not absolutely unquestionably clear from the text of Section 253A of the Telecom Act that that is what Congress intended, the court had to apply a rule of interpretation that says that it must assume that Congress did not have that intent. The Lautenberg and McCain bill will make it absolutely clear and leave no question that Congress intends for states to not erect barriers to the ability of local governments to accelerate the deployment of broadband in their communities.
So this essentially would clarify that point in the 1996 Telecommunications Act?
That's correct.
Okay.
It would clarify it and extend it to broadband as well as to telecommunication services. Actually, the bill that Senators Lautenberg and McCain have proposed would encourage local governments alone or in combination with the private sector to build advanced telecommunications networks, and then they can provide any service that such networks are capable of supporting.
Okay, and then to make the point that you've already made, this Community Broadband Act of 2005 also provides protections for private companies so that they shouldn't be discriminated against by the municipalities under any of these programs.
Yes, it's a very balanced bill in that regard.
Okay. Who's supporting this in the Senate right now, both in terms of the individuals and the interest groups that think this is a good idea?
Currently, there are five co-sponsors of this bill. They include Senator Frank Lautenberg of New Jersey, Senator John McCain of Arizona, Senator Lindsey Graham of South Carolina, Senator John Kerry of Massachusetts, and Senator Russ Feingold of Wisconsin.
So I count three Democrats and two Republicans in that list.
That is correct.
So it has bipartisan support.
Not only does it have bipartisan support, but these are also very much leaders of the Senate. It is a very bipartisan initial sponsorship, and we believe that there may well be a substantial number of additional senators who would be willing to stand behind this legislation.
Okay, now Senator McCain, who is a co-sponsor of this Community Broadband Act, is also a co-sponsor of Senator Ensign's efforts to rewrite the Telecommunications Act of 1996?
Correct.
How supportive of community broadband is Senator Ensign's bill right now, and what does all this mean about the centrality of Senator McCain in this whole process?
We regard Senator Ensign's bill to be not helpful in the public broadband area for a variety of reasons. If the persons who are listening to this interview are on the website to which I directed them earlier, they will see a statement in which I've summarized what we regard to be the problems with the Ensign Bill.
Could you summarize the summary for us?
Well, the Ensign Bill, in essence, provides for a complex bidding process that is based on the assumption that local governments have certain advantages over the private sector, and the effort of the bill is to create a bidding process that would somehow undo those supposed advantages. And the summary addresses the supposed advantages and indicates that those assumptions are inaccurate and that the process itself is unfair and unworkable. Now, Senator McCain's bill, the Lautenberg-McCain bill, is directed specifically to the public broadband issue. Senator Ensign's bill, as you have correctly summarized it, is a comprehensive telecommunications rewrite bill, reform bill, that covers not only public broadband, but a whole range of other issues that are important and controversial. The general tenor of the Ensign bill is that it is deregulatory in nature. Senator McCain supports the general principle of moving toward deregulation as rapidly as possible, and so believes in the general tenor of the Ensign bill, but he strongly supports his own public broadband provision and does not support Senator Ensign's provision on that score.
So how do you envision this is going to work out?
We envision that ultimately a public broadband measure will be part of comprehensive legislation that emerges from both the Senate and the House. Somewhere along the way, a public broadband measure will work its way into both the House bill and the Senate bill that becomes the vehicle for vote and then ultimately for congressional action. And if things go the way that we hope they will, the Lautenberg-McCain language on public broadband will be the language that emerges first in the Senate bill and then ultimately in the final law that Congress enacts.
What kind of timetable do you see for all of this?
It could take some time. In the Senate, people in Washington are generally awaiting for the chairman of the Senate Commerce Commission, Senator Ted Stevens of Alaska, to develop a comprehensive bill and to lay that bill on the table. That bill may contain some measures that are in the Ensign bill. It may be completely different. It will probably contain a public broadband provision. We are hoping and we are doing all we can to encourage that bill, whenever it emerges, to contain language that reflects the Lautenberg-McCain view of how public broadband should be handled.
So you're saying that Senator Stevens is an important player in this process as well?
Yes, he is.
Could you give us a little bit of the behind-the-scenes picture here in terms of how this letter and other steps you're taking are intended to influence the process and how much access you have and how you're competing with other groups that have other priorities in their telecommunications agenda?
Well, let me start with intent and then move to access and communication and see where that takes us.
Right.
In terms of intent, our primary intent is to enable the members of the Senate to appreciate that a very broad range of constituents across the entire spectrum of the American economy supports the Lautenberg-McCain view of public broadband. We're talking about representatives of the elderly, of higher education, of local governments, of the high technology industry, of libraries, and many others, where we believe across the board that broadband, and as much of it and as wide ranging of broadband as we can possibly get, is critically important to economic development, educational opportunity, homeland security, public safety, environmental protection, and just about everything that goes into a high quality of life. Everything that we do from today going forward will increasingly be done through broadband, be it occupational, educational, entertainment. Everything we do, we are moving to a broadband world. And in that world, the United States is falling increasingly behind what the leading nations in the world are doing.
And so what role do you see for municipal broadband in bridging that broadband gap?
We believe that there is no one answer to the issue of how to get broadband more quickly out to all Americans as rapidly as possible, that there will be a combination of different answers that we must address simultaneously. There are many technologies, wireline, wireless, broadband over power lines. There are many business models. There are many kinds of communities. There are rural communities, urban communities, large urban, small urban. There is no one shoe that fits all sizes. We think that the private sector cannot do the job alone. The public sector cannot do the job alone. We need to have the public and the private sectors working together to the maximum extent possible, doing what particular communities find most appropriate. We need to get past the point where we are quarreling over barriers to entry. We need to get external restrictions off the table so that local officials and industry and the many different constituencies that would benefit from access to broadband to work together to find solutions rather than problems. And that's our goal, is to get the senators to appreciate that we need to get the external restrictions off the table. And then when we do that, then anything is possible.
You're essentially saying that at the beginning of the 21st century, access to broadband connectivity is as important as access to electricity was at the turn of the 20th century.
As important as electricity, as important as access to telephone service during that period of time, it is crucial infrastructure. It is the platform on which businesses will succeed or fail, on which communities will succeed or fail. It is the platform on which America's ability to stay competitive in the emerging global economy depends.
Now,
it is that crucial to American life.
How recalcitrant or open to these ideas is the U.S. Senate, the greatest deliberative body in the self-proclaimed greatest deliberative body in the world? Is it a tough slog to get this information in front of the senators?
Well, the Senate hears the views of many different voices, and it hears from incumbent providers who have, in many cases, been reluctant to embrace change, but who have found it in their perceived interest to try to protect their markets, and they raise issues that, from their perspective, are beneficial to the interests that they represent. Congress is also increasingly hearing from us, both as a coalition and as individual members of these organizations, It is a complex issue. We're trying to simplify the issue with concrete examples of the good things that are happening across the country that need to be happening. Congress also can't afford to just sit back and consider any particular issue in a vacuum. They have many other issues of significance to deal with. We fight for their time. We fight for their attention. We fight for their understanding, because the issues that we're talking about are not amenable, we believe, to being dealt with sound bites one way or the other. You have to understand relationships that are complex on many levels. And to us, the issues are very simple. We need more broadband. We need broadband everywhere. We need it to be affordable. We need it to be inclusive. And we are hammering home on all those issues. And the more we talk to members of the Senate and the House and the media and local communities, the more people are appreciating what we're talking about. Over the course of the year 2005 that is closing, we have received an enormous amount of attention in not just the technical media, but also the mainstream media. They've been following this story for some time, as you have been, and I believe that there is a great deal more appreciation for the message that we're trying to share now than there was a year ago today.
Okay, say something specifically about how widespread and how useful community wireless has been in the wake of several recent natural disasters, and how that has impacted the discussion.
When Hurricane Katrina, followed by Hurricane Rita, struck the Gulf Coast, it had devastating effect on the states of Louisiana and Mississippi, to an extent, Texas, Florida, and Alabama. Immediately after the hurricanes ended, volunteers and others went into those regions and established wireless communications networks. Those networks had a tremendous helpful impact on enabling victims of the hurricanes to communicate with one another, to locate missing parties. They had a tremendous impact on helping the public safety and security agencies deal with issues. They filled an important gap left by wireline infrastructure that was either submerged or destroyed by those hurricanes. And it gave an important lesson to everyone that we need to have multiple alternatives to deal with natural disasters of that kind. The wireline facilities took a long time to be replaced and put back into service. The wireless activities were tremendously helpful in a very short term.
Did this even, in fact, make the case that wireless platforms are a superior form to wireline for ongoing provision of services?
I'd say that the answer is to that, it depends on what services that you're talking about. I believe that wireless plays an important role and is tremendously useful for some purposes, but wireline facilities also have superior features to wireless, at least in today's generation of technologies for other purposes. One cannot achieve today the same bandwidth with wireless as one can achieve with wireline facilities, certainly not with fiber facilities. Wireline facilities offer the ability to do the truly high bandwidth activities that are becoming increasingly important, that the leading nations are beginning to pursue in a major sort of way. We definitely need a combination of wireless and wireline wire line in and of itself has limitations as well. Mobility is, of course, the key limitation. You can't have a wire line to moving vehicles, for example. The combination of the two, I believe, is where our nation needs to go, and I think it has become increasingly clear to everyone that wireless has a very important role to play in both extending wireline systems, providing mobility, and being affordable, because okay. It's a lot less expensive to build wireline systems in many cases than it is wireline.
Right. Now, that's sort of just right next to that is the question of first responders using muni broadband. What's the 9/11 Commission reported last week that the communications among first responders is still not up to par, and I'm wondering if you could say something about the role of municipal broadband in providing that interoperable infrastructure for first responders of police, fire, medical personnel.
Well, we know that wireless can work in those areas, and we have many challenges to solve in dealing with issues of interoperability, of security of connections, of privacy, and so on and so forth. But the hurricanes have been a tremendous wake-up call to America to say that we cannot sit back and wait for more disasters, that we need to be working on multiple layers of useful infrastructure to enable our country, both in emergency situations and an ongoing basis, to deal with a new world of broadband and high-speed communication.
So essentially it's important both for sort of crisis situations and as an ongoing basis for economic and cultural development.
That's something I would agree with 100%.
Okay. Could you comment a little bit on the role of incumbent telcos and cable incumbents in the muni broadband issue? You could focus on Pennsylvania, but talk more generally as well.
Historically, the incumbent providers have tried to protect their turf from potential competition, not just by municipalities, but by any kind of competitor. They have fought both public and private overbuilders, as we call them. These are organizations or entities that sought to build alternative facilities-based systems that could appeal to consumers. The incumbents on the side of municipalities have sought, in some cases, to adversely influence the ability of municipalities to enter the field through state legislation, through campaigns at the local level, through efforts to achieve federal legislation, through litigation, through quarrels at the Public Service Commission level, through anti-competitive practices in the field.
No, in fact, Verizon was successful in implementing House Bill 30 in Pennsylvania that seems to have excluded all municipalities except Philadelphia from providing muni broadband there. Is that law subject to change? Is there a campaign going on to do that now in Pennsylvania that you could say something about?
Well, I think you're right in theory that the Pennsylvania law is a significant barrier to entry. It is not what we would say a flat-out prohibition, but it has terms and conditions that, as a practical matter, make entry extremely difficult and burdensome, and the law, in essence, gives Verizon and other telephone companies a right of first refusal to preclude municipalities from entering this field for whatever reasons they want to. And so, yes, the Pennsylvania law is clearly a barrier to entry.
Has the progress that Philadelphia has been making inspired other cities in the state to say, we'd like that too?
Well, there certainly has been a lot of attention paid to Philadelphia. And in fact, about 3-4 weeks ago, one of the committees that was involved in the development of House Bill 30, held a hearing to determine whether there was a case to be made for extending the period before the period in which efforts by local governments would be grandfathered.
What's that period now, or the deadline now?
The deadline now is the end of this month, and the hearing was about whether to extend the deadline a year.
And how's that going?
I'm not sure what the progress on that is. I know that I was there and gave testimony, as did a number of others, that said absolutely the grandfather period should be extended a year, but also in the course of the year, the legislature should revisit the underlying basis for the prohibition and remove it. Many of us talked about all of the new information that had emerged across the country over the course of the last year that the Pennsylvania legislature had not had available to it at the time that they made their decision, and that that information, we contended, suggested that laws like the Pennsylvania law are a bad idea for communities involved. They're a bad idea for the private sector, and they're a bad idea for American global competitiveness. Now, whether the Pennsylvania legislature can be persuaded in the next year to turn that law around remains to be seen.
Do you think that'll depend in some way upon how successful Philadelphia is in implementing its program and how popular it is?
It could. It could. Certainly, Philadelphia, not being adversely affected by that law because of an arrangement that Philadelphia and Verizon worked out right as the law was being passed at the end of the last year, enables Philadelphia to become sort of a
city on a hill,
something like that, but also a an example that people can look to. Had Philadelphia not had the flexibility to proceed with the notion that it would build a municipal wireless system to cover the whole city, it would arguably not have had the ability to attract a provider like Earthlink, with which it has agreed to partner to develop a wireless system for the city as a whole. There are many, many other communities across Pennsylvania as well as across the country that would like to do something appropriate to the community, whether it be on the model that Philadelphia is exploring or some different involvement model. But we've had over the course of the last 12 months an explosion of interest in the area, a very fertile period of people trying out new things, of learning about what is possible, of pushing the envelope in how to view these issues, how to talk with and to the private sector, and how to work in a way that benefits everyone.
Okay, now within that context then, what do you hope for as a result of the letter that your coalition has sent to the members of the U.S. Senate?
I would love to see a substantial number of senators sign on the Lautenberg-McCain bill as co-sponsors. I would love to see the language of Lautenberg and McCain find its way either into a comprehensive Senate bill, or perhaps if that gets bogged down, to move forward on its own as a standalone measure. I would like to see similar things happen in the House of Representatives, and then I would love to see the Lautenberg-McCain concept of no barriers but reasonable safeguards emerge as the law of the land. I would then like to see state legislators decline to make efforts to adopt new barriers. I'd like to see existing barriers rolled back, and I'd love to see communities and incumbents and beneficiaries of broadband, citizens groups, the elderly, the educational community, all pull together and find ways to get America moving again and moving back up the ladder of competitiveness in the emerging global economy.
How helpful or harmful or neutral has a mainstream media coverage been of this issue from your point of view up until now?
I think that over the course of the last year, the mainstream media has been tremendously helpful. Again, if you go to our website, www.valor.com, and migrate over to the community broadband page, you will see there a collection of a substantial number of articles from the mainstream media, from USA Today, Wall Street Journal, New York Times, the San Jose Mercury, and on and on and on, Washington Post, all saying that this phenomenon of municipal broadband is important, barriers to it are not a good idea, we should be pushing every alternative that America has to get broadband out and about as rapidly as possible and as affordably as possible.
Has all this risen to the level that it's going to be an important national and local issue in the congressional campaigns next year?
I can't say, but I would hope so. I would hope that individuals who have campaigns are going back to their communities and saying to their communities, what do we need to do here in our communities to make sure that we are not leaving any portion of our population behind in getting the benefits of the age of information? As a century ago, we worked as a nation to make sure that communities would not be left behind in obtaining the benefits of electrification. I think that those issues are extremely important. You might recall, Mark, that when electrification was slow, even with municipalities beginning to step forward at the turn of the century, the issue of public versus private involvement in the provision of electricity became one of the central campaign issues in the 1932 presidential campaign, one of the main issues on which Franklin Roosevelt ran was local choice, that communities ought to have the right to provide electric power of their own if they were dissatisfied with the extent or rate being charged by private utilities.
And in fact, on the federal level, the Roosevelt administration implemented the TVA.
That's correct. And I think if years from now we can look back to this period of time and say that we freed localities to participate in the development of public broadband, and the effect of that was as useful for America and for the communities involved as similar efforts were a century ago in the electric power arena, we will very much be able to say with pride that we achieved something very important during this period.
Okay. Tell people who want to learn more or get involved or both, again, where they can get more information.
I would be very happy to talk to or provide information to anyone who wants it. I would urge them to start with our website, www.valor.com. And from that website, go to the community broadband page, and there will be there a wealth of information at their fingertips. My number is 202-833-1144. Please feel free to call me, and I will connect you to others who may be working in their states or in their regions. I'll be happy to answer questions. We need all the help we can get. This is a crucially important issue for America, and we've got to get this right.
Thank you very much for talking to us today on Utopia Media's Broadband Wireless Access World, and wish you continued success, and I hope we can talk again as the process goes forward.
Thank you very much, Mark, and thank you to your readers for listening.
Okay. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.